Hey, good afternoon, everyone. This is Paul Jones. This is for Dr. Lucy's national security class. And we are going to be doing a podcast specifically talking about the Navy. And so for this podcast, I've invited two guests onto the show. We have Ruben, who's a United States Marine Corps. Say hi, Ruben.
Hello, everybody. So Ruben Garcia. I served in the Marines as an infantryman from 2009 to 2014. I did a deployment to Afghanistan, to Helmand province in 2011. Mainly patrolled around Camp Leatherneck, Camp Bastion during that time. Wasn't like the most combat heavy deployment, or really didn't see much combat at all, but it was a pretty major experience in my life. So that's where I'm coming from.
Awesome. Well, thanks for representing the Marines. We also got Cody here with U.S. Navy. Cody, tell us about yourself.
Well, first, thank you for having me, Paul. Just a little bit about me. I've been in the Navy for 13 years now. I've done multiple tours overseas, and quite a bit, actually, regarding to the USNS side. So that's the sphere of involving the Mercy and the Comfort here. So I definitely have a lot to say about that, because I have done security for these types of ships, providing security for civilian mariners and overseas contingencies, specifically in the 5th Fleet AOR. So that's going to be the CENTCOM and the AFRICOM areas of responsibility. So happy to have me.
Well, thank you both. I wanted to, introduce myself while I'm at it. I'm Air Force Medical. So Air Force Medicine, we probably do patient movement better than anybody. That's probably our bread and butter. But I am definitely not an expert on naval operations. So definitely welcome both of you onto the show and look forward to hearing your thoughts. For reference, I'm going to be drawing heavily upon the November 2025 National Security Strategy. I'll direct you to whitehouse.gov if you want to take a look at that in black and white, you know, in the written print. But in this document, it talks quite a bit about the need to have a more suitable Coast Guard and Navy presence to help control sea lanes, to thwart illegal and unwanted migration, to reduce human and drug trafficking, and control of key transit routes in crisis. It also goes on to talk a lot about the Navy and so forth, the military in general, requirement to just really put a spotlight on the world's most powerful, lethal, and technologically advanced military. I mean, it's very heavy on talking about the lethality of U.S. military and the importance and how that pulls into the national security strategy. What I want to talk about here a little bit today is I want to pull in a medical kind of perspective, because it's not necessarily specified in the document as written, but I think it's implied if we're going to be increasing our technological, you know, capabilities. We also want to be mindful of the Mercy and the Comfort. Now, these are the names of the two ships. They're both 1,000-bed hospitals. There's one that's in the Pacific and one that's in the Atlantic. And they've been around for a while. So I guess more specifically, the Comfort is based out in Virginia. So it's on that side of the country. And the Mercy is in San Diego, California. And what's unique about these ships, among other things, they started their life as oil tankers. All right. So they were built 50 years ago. And for the first 10 years of their existence, the Comfort and the Mercy just were oil vessels. They were then acquired by the Navy, and they were converted into level one trauma centers, essentially. And they've been using them for the past 40 years in that capacity. So they're 50-year-old ships, and they have a good reputation of responding both to humanitarian missions as well as to conflicts that are traditional military operations. They both kind of have their own history, of course, depending on what side of the continent we're talking about. But, you know, the Comfort was involved with Operation Noble Eagle. I mean, so they were basically docked right off of Manhattan when 9/11 happened. They engaged with Hurricanes Katrina and Rita down in New Orleans. They deployed for Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm. And you can say the same for the Mercy on the other side. Over, you know, they docked outside of Los Angeles, California for COVID-19. I mean, those are they're legitimate resources that are heavily used and beloved, you know, vessels for the U.S. Navy. Now, what's interesting is the Mercy is actually scheduled for an $89 million overhaul starting this month, actually March to September of 2026. So much like Air Force, you know, maybe the U-2 or the B-52, it's like they're kind of dinosaurs, but we kind of keep them flying. But it seems like the Mercy and the Comfort are kind of similar. So these are kind of almost hand-me-downs, if you will. I mean, they were never really designed intentionally to be naval hospitals. But nevertheless, that's what they were converted to. And I wanted to just kind of get your guys' perspective on the best way to go forward with these ships. And I'm just basically going to propose four different options. And then I'm just curious to hear your thoughts. There's not a wrong answer. There's not a right answer. It's just kind of what, from your own experiences with these capabilities, what you think. So I guess the first thing is there'd just be no change. You know, we're just going to overhaul the Mercy and we're just going to keep it going for, you know, the foreseeable future, you know, just keep dumping money into it and overhauling it and modernizing it. Another option, you know, when you look at how the current administration is just very heavily engaged, not just around the world, but specifically with naval warfare. So you got the Caribbean, you got Latin America, you got Iran, you got potentially Cuba coming online. I mean, if we're going to continue to just really push the envelope with these naval operations, I would suggest you could consider replacing both those ships, you know, and just be like, look, we need to just start over, you know, get new ones going online and keep that tradition and that legacy moving forward. I say that because these are not the first Comfort and Mercies in the history of the Navy, right? They retire and a new one comes along, they just rename the new ship and it's the same. But another option, so one is do nothing, two, replace both the ships. Three, it's really not unprecedented. I think it's an option to consider, but with the current administration, they can always revise the national security strategy, you know, and maybe as they're trying to fine-tune that document, they can narrow down maybe specific regions of the world or certain priorities, and that might kind of lessen the pressure on the Navy, and maybe that wouldn't be so urgent to hurry up and replace the ships, you know what I mean? If it's going to be that would be something they could consider. If, in fact, you guys think that the Navy's kind of stretched too thin, at some point there's going to be a straw that breaks the camel's back and, you know, we pushed them too hard, too far. The final option, I just ask for your consideration. When the Trump administration first came online, there was a lot of talk about isolationism and how the U.S. would pull back from getting involved in foreign affairs. We were going to focus on America, put America first, make America great again, you know, not be engaged in all these other countries' problems and concerns. So we can maybe reinvigorate those diplomatic efforts to kind of pursue the interests of our nation. But maybe we'll start with our Navy guest, Cody. I mean, tell us a little bit more about these ships. You mentioned you maybe have seen them or worked with them, and if so, what are your thoughts? Do you think we need to replace them? Are they kind of antiquated and they need to be changed altogether? What do you think?
Yeah, great questions there, Paul. And I really like your recommendations here. Just a little about the Mercy in itself. I never really saw the Mercy or Comfort, but I am familiar with the background. And I have some experiences. Like I said, they are half civilian mariner and also half military crew. So that is creates some dynamics there, because typically whenever you're a UNSNS ship, it's a bit like mainly manned by civilian mariners. So a lot of privatized side of the military there. One option you mentioned is that you don't change your ship, so you just keep them in place. But I think that just has some issues within itself, you know, because if you look at the life cycle of these ships, like what is that going to look like in the near future? Are we going to be able to continue just to retrofit these ships that just not haven't been replaced or anything else? So what does that look like in the long run? Are we just going to continue to spend $889 million in overhaul expenses when we could just build a new ship for probably about that same cost? So I think that's some of the things we need to look into when in regards to retrofitting these ships, you know, because at that point we could just make two new ships potentially and just have that same save cost analysis benefits there and just ultimately save money. The other option you said is replace boat, which I think is the most viable option. You know, these ships are, like I mentioned before, the life cycle expectancy is definitely overdue. You know, if you look at most ships in the U.S. has, they're definitely not 50 years old. They're within the 30, 40-year-old time frame. So this ship is definitely well past that time frame. And I think it's necessary to consider different options available of what we do have. So I know recently I served on the expeditionary security based ships that have the same kind of retrofit. They are suitable to do mass casualty drills. So maybe having more ships like that, and the honor of like Medal of Honor recipients. So I think they have five of them out right now that are commissioned. There's a couple more they're producing. So maybe you can have these ships that are the ESB class kind of just take over these roles that within the Mercy and the Comfort have. So I think there's more ships available. It has better for the readiness on the long end, because they rotate ships out. You have forward deployed. Some of them are currently forward deployed, one within each geographic region. So I think that's also a better option to have, rather than just replace, you know, just give the new ships and just give them that mission set, right? Just the whole humanitarian aid, disaster relief, and go from there. In regards to the national security, I think it's very hard whenever you're talking about the medical side, because it is narrow with regards to that. So I think it's a little bit hard to include the medical terminology and the war fighting into the national security strategy. But I do agree. It's like, you know, I think we need to narrow our interest. And on your last point, the isolationism, I think these types of ships do a lot of good, you know, in diplomatic missions, you know, so, you know, guaranteeing U.S. commitments and aid, you know, just showing that support, you know, our trust and liability, and just showing our overall credibility. So those are my thoughts. Ruben, what do you think?
Regarding option one, I definitely agree with you about the fact that it's getting to the point where overhauling it ends up costing as much, if not more, than just building a new ship. It becomes kind of less viable to do that. I liken it to, I know it's kind of a cheap analogy, but I liken it to when you have an old car and you're having to take it to the shop every other week. At that point, you're just better off getting a new car because you're spending so much money trying to fix it. So I kind of agree that option two is going to be the most viable one, just because, especially with the tempo that we're asking our Navy to operate at. I mean, we can look at the Gerald Ford as an example of like what happens when you have a ship that's already got a lot of issues. Because even before the current conflict, the Gerald Ford was having all these problems with the plumbing backing up like for years, from what I've read. So it was, that doesn't guarantee that the like laundry fire that happened on it recently was a guarantee to happen. It's just that it's kind of an example of how, with some of these smaller ships that are actually provide that value as hospital ships, it makes more sense to kind of just replace them with brand new ones. Like you said, there's been multiple Comforts and Mercies in the past. Lots of other naval ships have had, I mean, how many USS Enterprises have we had? How many USS whatevers have we had? You probably know better about that than I would, Cody.
I do appreciate that. And I like Cody's idea of, you know, getting smaller ships. Maybe they can get into shallower harbors, or they can be more versatile, and there are definitely some possibilities to do that. Having 1,000-bed or these larger, you know, massive hospitals floating almost provide a different capability. I know that with China, they're currently already exceeding their Navy size. It's much bigger than U.S. size. So we're already kind of behind the power curve in some regards. I don't want Navy medicine to kind of overlook the Comfort and Mercy as they're looking at these other war fighting, you know, the Trump's new battleship he's trying to get online and this and that and the other. But I definitely appreciate both of your thoughts. It sounds like you're both kind of agreeing that building, acquiring new Comfort and Mercy would be an option worth considering. In my paper, and I'll post that for those that are interested, I also make the argument that I think that, you know, it costs money and that's going to get some pushback and some concern. But I see this as a bipartisan effort. I think Democrats and Republicans both serve in the military, both want to see our service members get the health care that they need, both see the value of that golden hour and the need to get people the care they need immediately. And so definitely I think that it's not unreasonable, or at least I think it's worth the discussion. But I want to thank both of you for your time. I think that you definitely add a lot of validity or authentic perspective to this discussion, because both of you have been the beneficiaries of naval medicine. And I thank you for your time. Any closing comments or thoughts?
No, thank you, Paul, for having us. It means a lot to be a part of this.
Absolutely. Same here, Paul. It was good. I actually learned a lot from listening to your brief at the beginning.
All right. No problem. Thanks again, guys.